A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's question this time is gloriously specific. He says we've covered the top hat and the medieval flute player's tunic, but those are entry-level anachronisms. He wants to know which genuinely pre-industrial garments are worth adding to your wardrobe if you're serious about projecting the image of a bloke from another era. Not costume pieces. Daily wearables.
And this is the right moment for this question, because historical reenactment has gone mainstream and the cottagecore and dark academia aesthetics have bled into everyday fashion. The question of which historical garments are worth the investment has never been more practical.
So we're not doing a costume party shopping list. We're doing a taxonomy.
And the taxonomy I want to start with is the distinction between garments that are merely obsolete and garments that are structurally alien. A top hat is obsolete. Nobody wears one, but everyone recognizes it, and you can still sit in a modern chair while wearing one. The garments we're talking about today change how you walk, how you sit, how you occupy space, and how other people perceive your personal boundaries. I'm ranking them by what I'm calling anachronism, density, how much they change your behavior per square inch of fabric.
Anachronism density. You've been waiting to use that phrase.
I have, and I'm not apologizing. The thesis is this. The most effective anachronistic garments aren't the most visually flamboyant. They're the ones that force you to inhabit a different physical relationship with the world. A feathered hat says, I'm from another time. A doublet makes you stand like you're from another time.
So, let's start with the garment that has the highest ratio of cultural baggage to actual square footage. The codpiece.
The most misunderstood garment in Western fashion history. And I need to lead with the misconception busting here because everyone assumes the codpiece was a sexual display piece from day one. It wasn't. The codpiece originated in the 15th century as a purely practical solution to a tailoring problem.
What was the problem?
Men's fashion in the 1400s consisted of a doublet, a short-fitted jacket, and hose, which were essentially two separate fabric tubes that covered each leg and laced to the doublet. As doublets got shorter through the century, they left a gap at the front. You had hose on each leg, a short doublet that ended at the waist or higher, and nothing covering the junction. The codpiece was literally a triangular flap that laced or buttoned over that gap. It was a modesty panel.
So the first codpieces were the medieval equivalent of realizing your shirt doesn't quite reach your waistband and adding a patch.
That's exactly what they were. Early examples from the late 1400s are modest, flat, and purely functional. But here's where it gets interesting. By the early 1500s, the codpiece had become a status-signaling accessory. It got padded, embroidered, slashed to show the contrasting fabric underneath, and in some cases enlarged to absurd proportions. Henry VIII's armor from 1540, which is at the Tower of London, includes a codpiece that's a separate articulated steel component.
A steel codpiece? For a man who was already making a statement?
The man wasn't subtle. But the steel codpiece was actually functional. It was armor. The fashion codpieces of the same period were padded with horsehair or bombast, and they could be large enough to use as a pocket. There are accounts of men keeping coins, handkerchiefs, even oranges in their codpieces.
The original cargo shorts.
I hate that you're not wrong. But here's what makes the codpiece fascinating from an anachronism density standpoint. It's structurally simple but socially impossible. A properly fitted codpiece attached to a pair of joined hose is comfortable. It eliminates the need for modern underwear and provides actual structural support. The mechanics work. The problem is that wearing one under modern trousers creates a silhouette that reads as anatomical exaggeration rather than historical accuracy.
So the verdict on the codpiece is, it works, but only if you commit to the full period lower body.
Full period lower half commitment. You can't wear a codpiece with jeans. You need joined hose, which means you need a doublet to lace them to, which means you're now wearing a complete 15th or 16th century outfit from the waist down. The anachronism density is extremely high, but it's not modular. It's all or nothing.
And that brings us to the foundation garment that makes the codpiece possible, the doublet.
Which is, in my opinion, the single most wearable anachronistic garment available to the modern man. And I say this from experience.
You own a doublet.
I own three. And before you make the joke, yes, I wear them.
I wasn't going to make a joke. I was going to ask what it feels like.
It changes your posture immediately. A proper doublet isn't a jacket. It's a fitted, stiffened foundation garment that was worn from the 15th through the 17th centuries. Unlike a modern jacket, which drapes from the shoulders, a doublet is constructed to create a specific silhouette. Broad shoulders, narrow waist, with the front stiffened using buckram or multiple layers of linen interlining. In the Elizabethan period, you also got the pea's cod belly, where the front was padded to create a pigeon-chested silhouette that projected masculine virility.
Pea's cod belly, because it looks like a pea pod.
The padding sits low on the abdomen and tapers to a point. It was enormously fashionable in the 1570s and 80s. But the crucial mechanical detail, and this is what makes a doublet different from any modern garment, is that a proper doublet has eyelets at the waist for lacing your hose directly to it. You create a single continuous garment from shoulder to knee. The sleeves attach via points, which are laces threaded through eyelets at the shoulder. Everything is modular, everything is connected, and the whole system distributes weight across your shoulders and torso rather than hanging from your waist like modern trousers.
So you're essentially wearing a structural exoskeleton.
A fabric exoskeleton, yes. And that changes how you stand. The stiffened front keeps your spine straight, the shoulder construction pulls your shoulders back. The cinched waist makes you aware of your breathing. After wearing a doublet for an hour, you're standing taller, your chest is slightly forward, and your arms hang differently. It's not uncomfortable. A well-fitted doublet is surprisingly comfortable because the weight distribution is correct, but it imposes a physical discipline that modern clothing doesn't.
And how do people react when you wear one in public?
That depends entirely on the fabric and the cut. A doublet in dark wool, black, charcoal, forest green, with minimal decoration and a simple standing collar reads as a cool historical jacket rather than a costume. I've worn one to dinner, to the market, to casual gatherings. The most common reaction is, "That's an interesting coat. Where did you get it?" Not, "Why are you wearing a costume?" The key is to wear it as an outer layer over modern clothing. A t-shirt or a thin sweater underneath, modern trousers below, though you lose the hose, lacing function that way.
So the doublet is the highest practical anachronism density. Wearable daily, changes your posture, historically accurate, and socially survivable.
It's the winner. If you buy one anachronistic garment, make it a well-made wool doublet from a reputable historical tailor, not a costume piece. The construction matters enormously. Proper materials, correct seam allowances, hand-sewn eyelets. A $50 polyester doublet from a Halloween store will look wrong, feel wrong, and fall apart in a month. Historical garments are structural engineering. You're buying architecture, not decoration.
So that's the codpiece. A garment that started as a practical flap and ended as a steel-plated status symbol. And the doublet, which is wearable. But if you want something that changes your entire physical presence, not just your silhouette, let's talk about the farthingale.
The garment that redefines personal space. The farthingale originated in Spain in the late 15th century and spread across Europe over the next 100 years. The Spanish version, called the verdugado, used concentric hoops of whalebone or cane sewn into channels in a linen underskirt. Typically, 3 to 7 graduated hoops creating a conical silhouette. The French farthingale of the 1590s used a padded roll at the waist with a drum-shaped frame that extended horizontally, creating what's sometimes called a wheel farthingale.
And this isn't a skirt.
It's absolutely not a skirt. A farthingale is a structural frame. It's an item of engineering worn under the actual skirt. The hoops support the weight of the overskirt and create a rigid geometric shape. Everything about your physical relationship with the world changes when you put one on. You can't sit in a modern chair. The hoops ride up in front and the frame tilts. You need a stool without arms, or you need to perch on the edge of something with the frame tilted back. You can't pass through a standard doorway sideways because the width of the frame exceeds the width of a modern door. You have to turn and go through straight on, and even then it's tight. You walk with a specific gait, a kind of gliding step, to keep the frame balanced and prevent it from swinging.
You've worn one.
I have worn one. And the single most educational experience was attempting to use a modern restroom while wearing a farthingale.
Tell me.
The stall door opens inward. You can't enter the stall while wearing the farthingale because the frame is wider than the door opening. You have to back in, which means the frame catches on the door, which means you're now wedged between a toilet and a door with a hoop skirt compressing against your ribs. It took me 4 minutes. I emerged a changed man.
And this was the point of the garment originally, wasn't it? It wasn't just fashion.
That's the crucial insight. The farthingale was a literal barrier. It enforced physical distance between the wearer and others. It made intimate proximity impossible. It signaled, unambiguously, that the wearer didn't perform manual labor and couldn't be approached casually. You can't embrace someone wearing a wheel farthingale. You can barely stand next to them. It was the ultimate status garment because it made the wearer physically incapable of most work and socially inaccessible. The farthingale didn't just display wealth, it enforced it through architecture.
So the modern viability is essentially zero for daily wear.
For daily wear, zero. But for a special event, or what I'd call a historical immersion day, the farthingale is the single most effective garment for forcing everyone around you to treat you as a person from another era. It's not subtle. It's not practical. But if your goal is to project, I'm not from this century, nothing does it faster or more completely. The frame changes how you move, how others move around you, and how the entire social geometry of a room organizes itself.
And Queen Elizabeth I was the master of this.
The Ditchley portrait from 1592 shows her in a wheel farthingale that extends so far horizontally that her waist appears to be the center of a drum-shaped platform. The dress is architectural. It's not clothing in the modern sense. It's a portable court. And she used it strategically. You can't approach the queen casually when she's wearing a 4-foot-wide frame. You must stop at the perimeter. You must be announced. The garment does the work of protocol.
So we've covered the heavy hitters. The codpiece, the doublet, the farthingale. But what if you want the look without the commitment? That's where the accessory anachronisms come in.
The partlet and the forepart. These are the stealth anachronisms. A partlet is a separate collar and shoulder covering that originated in the 16th century. It was worn under a low-cut bodice to create a modesty layer, covering the neck, shoulders, and upper chest. It could be made of linen for everyday wear, or silk and velvet for formal occasions, sometimes with a small standing collar or ruff at the neck. A forepart is a decorative triangular panel that fills the front opening of a gown, often richly embroidered or made of contrasting fabric. Both of these are modular. They attach to or layer with existing garments.
And the modern application?
A partlet worn over a modern dress or top immediately reads as Tudor or Elizabethan without requiring a full gown. It's essentially a detachable collar and shoulder covering. You can wear it with a simple modern dress, and suddenly you're period adjacent. It's the lowest commitment anachronism available, wearable to a Renaissance fair, a themed party, or honestly a dinner where you want to be slightly interesting without looking like you're in full costume. The anachronism density is low, but the social acceptability is high.
So if the doublet is the daily driver, and the farthingale is the nuclear option, the partlet is the gateway drug.
That's exactly the taxonomy. And I want to emphasize something about all of these garments that most people get wrong. Historical clothing wasn't uniformly uncomfortable. A well-fitted doublet distributes weight across your shoulders in a way that modern jackets don't. A properly constructed farthingale rests on your hips, and the weight of the skirts is supported by the frame, not by your waist. The idea that our ancestors were just suffering in their clothes for the sake of fashion is mostly wrong. They were solving engineering problems, weight distribution, thermal regulation, modular attachment systems, and they were good at it.
The modern assumption is that we've progressed linearly from discomfort to comfort, but some of these garments solve problems we've forgotten we had.
The doublet and hose system is a perfect example. Modern trousers hang from your waist or hips and require a belt to stay up. The weight is concentrated on a narrow band around your midsection. The doublet and hose system distributes that weight across your shoulders and torso. The hose are laced to the doublet at multiple points around the waist. Nothing slides down. Nothing needs constant adjustment. It's a superior load-bearing system that we abandon for the convenience of separates.
So let's do the ranking. You promised anachronism density. Practicality multiplied by historical accuracy multiplied by behavior change.
Number 1, the doublet. Wearable daily changes your posture, historically correct, and socially survivable in dark wool with minimal decoration. It's the single best investment for a modern anachronist. Number 2, the codpiece. High impact, functional, but requires full period lower half commitment. You can't wear half a codpiece. Number 3, the partlet. Low commitment, moderate impact, high social acceptability. It's the entry point. Number 4, the farthingale. Maximum impact, zero daily practicality. It's for special occasions where you want to be the architectural center of the room.
And the trap to avoid with all of these.
Buying cheap costume versions. A $50 polyester anything from a Halloween store will look wrong, feel wrong, and fall apart. Historical garments are structural engineering. They require proper materials, linen, wool, substitutes for whalebone like synthetic baleen or steel boning, and proper construction techniques. Hand-sewn eyelets aren't decorative. They're load-bearing. Correct seam allowances aren't pedantry. They're what keeps the garment from tearing when you move. If you're going to do this, buy from a reputable historical tailor or learn to make them yourself. There's no middle ground between proper construction and a costume that disintegrates on its second wearing.
And where does one find a reputable historical tailor?
There are a handful of shops that specialize in this, mostly in the UK and the US, that produce garments for reenactors, theater companies, and the occasional eccentric who wants a wool doublet for Tuesday. Expect to pay real money. A well-made doublet will run you several $100 minimum. A farthingale frame, properly boned and fitted, is in the same range. These aren't impulse purchases. They're investments in a different century.
Which brings us to the deeper question. What happens when the anachronistic garment becomes so effective that it changes not just your appearance, but your behavior permanently?
There are documented cases, and I'm drawing on conversations with reenactors here, not formal studies, of people who report that wearing a doublet for extended periods has permanently improved their posture. The stiffened front and shoulder construction retrain your muscles. After weeks or months of regular wear, you stand differently even when you're not wearing it. The garment has literally changed your body.
So the anachronism doesn't stay on the hanger.
That's the point. The most anachronistic thing you can wear isn't a specific garment. It's the willingness to be physically uncomfortable for the sake of historical accuracy. Every one of these garments demands a sacrifice of modern convenience. The doublet demands that you stand up straight. The farthingale demands that you plan your route through doorways. The codpiece demands that you commit to an entirely different lower body architecture. That sacrifice isn't a bug, it's the feature. The discomfort is what makes it real.
And that's what separates the costume from the commitment. A costume says, I'm pretending to be from another time. The commitment says, I'm willing to inhabit the physical constraints of another time, and those constraints will change me.
The doublet changed my posture. The farthingale changed my relationship with architecture. These garments aren't decorations, they're disciplines.
So Daniel's question, which anachronistic garments are worth adding to your wardrobe, has an answer that depends entirely on how much you're willing to be changed by what you wear. If you want the highest ratio of impact to social survivability, buy a dark wool doublet. If you want to make a statement that can't be ignored, commission a farthingale and accept that you'll never use a public restroom the same way again.
And if you want to start small, a linen partlet over a modern outfit is the gateway. It says, I know what century I'm in, but I'm visiting from another one.
On the record. Predictions.
Within 2 years, we'll see a major fashion brand, probably a Japanese or European label, release a doublet-inspired outerwear piece that incorporates the stiffened front and laced shoulder construction, marketed as posture-correcting heritage wear. It'll cost too much, and the eyelets will be decorative rather than functional, but it'll sell.
Within 18 months, a prominent actor will wear a codpiece to a red carpet event, claiming it as a statement about masculine vulnerability or some such, and the internet will produce approximately 40,000 hot takes before everyone remembers that the codpiece was originally a modesty panel, and the entire discourse collapses under its own irony.
That's distressingly specific and entirely plausible.
Thank you. My prediction is that the farthingale will make a comeback, not in fashion, but in high-end interior design. Someone will build a chair specifically designed for hoop skirts, market it as a conversation piece, and sell exactly 12 of them at $8,000 each.
I...
You don't have a farthingale.
I could acquire one.
This has been a dangerous episode. Our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, is probably already researching tailors.
This has been My Weird Props. If you have a question about historical garments or anything else you'd like us to overthink, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Try not to buy a codpiece in the meantime.
Unless you're committed.
Full lower half commitment or nothing.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.